Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Good morning and welcome to the Lombardi Line. I'm Michael Lombardi. Today I'm honored to be joined by the great Will Hill, the pride of Connecticut, filling in for Dave Ross, who's enjoying some time, Thanksgiving time with his family. Dave, we miss you. Will, it's good to have you here on the show. Couldn't be a better day after last night's Raven victory against the Chargers. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the game and how Lamar keeps defying these odds by covering spreads of three or less and playing sensationally on night games, especially during the regular season.
What's going on, Lombardi? Happy to be with you. Really fun time of the year. I mean, by the time you wake up, go to bed, there's college basketball on all day, all night, all the NFL, Thanksgiving, Black Friday with the college football. So there are sports on all the time. It's the best. Yeah, it was a fun game last night, and we can get into some of the refereeing at the end. I actually thought the Chargers didn't get a great whistle. I'm still not sure why they picked up that flag at the end, and any chance the Chargers had to get back in the game kind of went out the window. But Chargers couldn't get off the field. I mean, you look at the drive summary. The Ravens punt twice in the first quarter. They punt at the end of the game when they're up 14, just milking the clock. They didn't punt in the body of the game other than that. They had five drives, four touchdowns, one field goal. Chargers couldn't get off the field, and the Ravens offense just dominated. Lamar didn't look great early, but he moved the ball at will. Henry moved the ball at will for most of this game, and the Chargers just couldn't get a stop. I think big picture, my takeaway is we might look back in January and say this might be the 3 or 4 days, the week where the Ravens wrestled the division away and won the division, because Pittsburgh won a game where, hey, they're up, what were they up? A couple points with the ball on Thursday night against the Browns. Chance to put that game away with a first down or two. They couldn't. Ravens are in a game where, hey, it's a coin flip going in. They're down 10 early, but they end up winning. And if you look at the odds now, Ravens minus 210 to win the division. Look at the Steelers' schedule coming up. It is brutal. Now, I know the Ravens have the Eagles this week, but that game is in Baltimore. The Steelers' schedule, and I know we've talked about it all summer, and they've defied the odds, but this is where it gets really tough, because they are at Bengals, at Eagles, at Ravens, and Chiefs, four of the next five. They do have a home game against the Browns mixed in, and they finish with the Bengals. So I don't know how many wins you're getting there. I think Baltimore might be in good shape to win this division, Michael.
I thought the most significant aspect of the game last night was the Ravens getting behind 10 to nothing, and they didn't panic like they panicked when they got behind in the conference championship game. And I think part of the reason they don't panic any longer is because they have Henry, because they have to feed the monster. And now they've become a team much like Philadelphia, in the sense that when it's third and one, they're a gimme to get the first down. When it's fourth and one, they're a gimme to get the first down. They have way too many plays in their arsenal, whether, you know, before you had a really key on Lamar on those short yardage plays, but now you've got a key on Henry, and they run gap schemes. They run lead play. They run all different things to make it very difficult for you to stop the big guy from getting into the point of entry and making a first down. So I think he served two really incredible roles in what they're doing, is in the fact that they didn't panic, and they can control the pace of the game by getting into these third and shorts and winning. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think the Steelers' schedule, we know that they'll win some of those games that we don't think they will win, but I think it's a tough road ahead. Whereas Baltimore, they got Philadelphia this week, then they go into the bye. My question to you is, how good is Baltimore's defense? I still am not sold that this defense is going to be able to hold up in a really good playoff game.
I mean, it's a major concern. I don't know, like, is the championship level defense, is their offense good enough to overcome that? I remember, you know, some of the Vikings team I was rooting for growing up, like the Randy Moss teams, they were so good on offense, but they were just not good enough on defense, and they could just never quite overcome it. I know offense is really important, and maybe they can piece together enough stops to get it done. There's no great teams, maybe outside of Detroit, who's just absolutely mauling everybody. Because if you watch the Chiefs, I don't know how good their pass defense is since the injury to Watson. They haven't really defended well in the secondary. The Bills look like a complete team, but there are no great teams. So maybe they can get to a Super Bowl despite the defense. But I don't know. Would you say the defense is a non-starter for you in terms of being a title, or can they actually overcome it to win a championship? And by the way, Tucker was good last night. Extra points, one field goal, he at least looked a little better, which is maybe a positive sign, which was a major concern for me going into the game.
He better look good. He's indoors. I mean, if he didn't look good last night, when is he going to look good? To me, I don't even count last night as comeback or on the right track. When you're in that perfect stadium, look, I think to me, the defense, it's just, to me, there's not enough pass rush in the defense. You know, I know Van Noy made a play in the fourth quarter, and I know that they, but to me, I think when you give up a 10-0 lead, I worry about their coverage, and I worry, look, Herbert was converting some third and longs in that third quarter, and they got a holding call. He came, overcame that. He was able to come back. But I just feel like at the end of the day, if they play Buffalo or a really good passing team, you know, I'm not sure Kansas City is that, but the only team they have to beat is Buffalo, really, in terms of who throws the football effectively. Kansas City can throw it, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if Kansas City's a deadly matchup for with their receiver situation for Baltimore. But let's flip it to the Chargers a little bit here. They're still the sixth seed at 7-5, tied with Denver. They have the tiebreaker because they beat Denver in the conference game. So, look, I think they are ahead of schedule. They're a little bit like the Washington Commanders. I think they're ahead of where they should be in terms of the coaching that they're getting. But I just didn't think they had enough players on that team to really overcome a really good Baltimore offense.
Yeah, and that Ravens defense would look a lot better if they could bring Quentin Johnson wherever they play and have him play for the other team, because, my goodness, that guy could not catch the ball last night. Oh,
yeah,
my
God, that's true. Bad. Yeah, no question. Yeah, I mean, that third down drop he had, that could have been that might have been a touchdown. Yep.
And then he had another one that was really bad. I mean, he's had a nice bounce back here, but he was awful last night, and he really killed him. McConkey's the only reliable guy the Chargers have to throw to. Look, I think the Chargers, they're a playoff team. They're clearly a playoff team. I think they're a little bit like Houston last year, where they get in, maybe they win a game, and then we'll see from there. I think these teams would all like to play Houston in the first round. Now, they lost to Pittsburgh head-to-head, and now they lost to Baltimore head-to-head. So it's going to be hard for them to break ties and get to the 5 seed, where they'd probably get Houston in the 5-4 matchup. So that's a big deal, because if you're not playing Houston in the first round, you're playing one of the other division winners, if you're the Chargers, which means either Baltimore, Kansas City, or Buffalo. So that's a big difference between playing Houston and playing one of the other three. But like you said, ahead of schedule, they're going to be really good next year, 2 years from now, because really the only thing they need is kind of the easiest thing to find. That's skill guys. I mean, you could find running backs and receivers. The offensive line is set. The defense is set. We know the coach is set. I don't care what people say. The quarterback is set. Herbert is really good. I'm glad he's having a year where he shows his talent, because I think, you know, he's been unfairly labeled as, oh, he's not a winner. He's this, he's that. I know the record isn't flattering to him, and he's had some moments in the clutch where, hey, you'd like him to come through a little better, but he has not been in a good situation with a team with no home field advantage, with Staley. They never had a running game. Everyone said, well, he had elite weapons with Keenan Allen and Eckler and Mike Williams. I mean, if you look what those guys got traded for, Keenan Allen got traded for a 4th-round pick. Eckler got like 2 years, $11 million from Washington, and Mike Williams just got traded for a 5th-round pick. So he has not been playing with, you know, the Chases of the world, the Higgins, what some of these other guys get in terms of weapons. So I think Herbert's really good. I think the coach is really good. I think they're dangerous once they get in. It depends who they play. I don't know that I'd pick them to win at Buffalo, at Kansas City, at any of these teams. But I know if I'm that other team, I know it's a cliche, but I wouldn't want to see the Chargers in round one. I think they are a really, really tough out.
They really are. And I think, look, to me, I looked this morning before we started the show, the game in Atlanta. Atlanta's coming off a bye. The Chargers play Monday night, have to travel to Atlanta. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of Atlanta money just on principle alone, just because of the travel element that goes into this game. But I would not bet against the Chargers this week against a really bad Atlanta defense. And these are the kind of games that the old Chargers would have lost by 2 touchdowns. But the new Chargers, with mental toughness and physical toughness, brought along by Jim Harbaugh, I mean, this is in their wheelhouse now. This, to me, is in their wheelhouse, and I think they'll rally the troops. And my recommendation is let that, see if the number moves. I think it's going to move towards Atlanta just because of the travel and people underestimating the Chargers. But I would be all over the Chargers if I were getting points here in this situation. What do you think?
I didn't see. What did it open at? It wasn't up last I looked.
It's still a pick, or it's zero, or like minus one. Yeah, I do too. I mean, Atlanta's
going to win that division. We were talking about that before the break. You look at Tampa's schedule. I know Carolina's played a little better. Young's played a little better. They get 2 games against the Panthers. They get the Saints at home. They get the Raiders at home. Tampa might be in first place in a couple of weeks. I think Atlanta's a mess. Then Atlanta goes at Minnesota in a couple of weeks. Did you have a problem with them picking up the flag late in that game?
No, I mean, look, I thought that the couple, they picked it up earlier in the game, too. I think in those kind of situations when it's, to me, when they're both playing it, I didn't think it was a badly refereed game. I felt like there was some times, like the holding call early in the third quarter on Makar. I mean, the guy, that was a horrendous call. John Harbaugh was looking up at the screen saying, what is that call? You know, look, I think to me, the way we get officiated today, I mean, if Scott Novak's on that field, they're not picking up the flag. Let me just say that. You know, it just all depends on who's calling and how they control the game. But this wasn't a game that the referees affected. Baltimore was the better team. I think Baltimore was the better team. You win by 7 on the road, and you're able to control the pace of the game like they did. I mean, look, this was the number one run defense in the National Football League going into that game, and Baltimore ran for 212 yards. What does that tell you? That's total. And the Chargers want to run the ball. Now, this is one of the handicaps of the game, Will. You just knew the Chargers weren't going to be able to run the ball. They had to throw it 36 times. They had 20 carries for 63 yards. That's just not going to be good enough to really get the pace. And 17 yards came on a long run by Dobbins. So I think Baltimore was the better team. I think they were the better team going in. That's why they were the road favorite. But I think, to me, they proved it. And the longer the game goes, I think we have to be aware of this, the longer the game goes, it's always harder on the lesser team. Like the Rams, they got worn out in the fourth quarter. They got worn out in the second half. They just couldn't hold up.
Yeah, and the Chargers had a chance to put them away early, up 10-0. I think they had the ball, just couldn't quite, you know, put them away when the Ravens were struggling. By the way, Dobbins hurt again. Good story. Had a million injuries. Finally came back this year. Finally healthy. It looks like he's hurt again, which is tough to see.
Yeah, no, I know. That's so painful to watch. I mean, the kid just – and he's a good player, but it's just not enough. You know, well, we're just getting started here with Will Hill on the Lombardi Line. When we come back, we're going to take a look at some of these line movements that are happening around the NFL and the fact that who might be coming back for the Jacksonville Jaguars besides Doug Peterson. We'll see you when we get back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN is partnered with Poker Now, and together we're hosting an online poker tournament this Sunday, December 1st at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can win a golden passport for a free seat at the largest poker free roll ever. The World's Poker Tour 5 million free fall in Las Vegas later in December. Visit VSiN.com/poker and register today for your chance to win. That's VSiN.com/poker for your chance to win. Sounds like a wonderful deal there. Will, you a poker player? I think we lost Will Hill here for a second, so hopefully when he comes back, we'll be able to talk about it. But we got him back here. Will, are you a poker player?
Not a poker player, Lombardi. Not a poker player.
No, well, you know, I mean, that sounds like a hell of a tournament, a chance to win a $5 million free roll in Las Vegas. I think that's awesome. So hopefully people will do it. But we have our own business to attend to here on the Lombardi Line. A lot of injuries. We got Thursday, we got Black Friday, and then we have the Sunday slate of games. So let's start off on Thursday night talking about the Lions and the Bears. That line's at 10.5. To me, the Bears just don't seem like they can find a way to win close games. But there are some injury concerns for the Detroit Lions. David Montgomery has a shoulder. Armon St. Brown has a knee. They're both listed as did not practice on Monday, which to me makes all the sense in the world. They just played a game on Sunday. So I think those two should be ready to go. I think this is all just a rest, but we could see some quarterback operations change. Gardner Minshew is going to go on IR. Aiden O'Connell comes back with Desmond Ridder being the backup. Trevor Lawrence practiced on Monday, which, you know, might affect that line. I don't know what's affecting the line down in Houston against Houston because, Will, Houston played so poorly, and that's what I want to start today. Houston played so poorly that even as bad as Jacksonville is, they're just a 5.5-point dog at home. What are your thoughts on this game going in?
I mean, that's a tough point. That's a tough team to lay points with at this point with Houston. They've just been so mediocre based on, you know, what our expectations were before the season, with people thinking they could take the next step, play in the AFC title game, maybe go to a Super Bowl. I mean, they're not going anywhere. They're going to get in basically by default and win that division. But I don't know who they're beating once they do get in. And this has really been a big step backwards. And sometimes this happens with rookie quarterbacks, but I'm curious what you think. If you have concern with Stroud going forward, is he really the guy we thought last year? Is this just sort of a natural regression and he's going to be fine? I'm not sure, but it would be, not that I'm dying to bet Jacksonville, but I have no interest in laying points here on the road. And I would love to pick a team to like come back and win that division. I just can't get behind Indy. Obviously, it's not going to be the Titans. It's not going to be the Jags. So Houston can probably just get the 8 wins and win this division. Maybe Indy can make a run. I don't know, but I have no interest in laying the points here with Houston.
Yeah, I don't trust Indy. I mean, Indy, all the sharps last week were all over the Colts. And I, you know, I didn't understand it because I can't, as I've said many times on this show, the Colts are one of the hardest teams to watch play because they lure you into thinking they could make a play. And then all of a sudden he's got a wide open receiver and he can't make the throw to him. So, you know, I just can't really get excited. This week they traveled to New England. New England played like really poorly, although, you know, just so we get this straight, Gerard Mayo can't control what happens once they cross that line. So we'll take care of that. But let's get back to Houston. I'm a little worried about Stroud, and I'm worried from the sense that he hasn't gotten any protection. And he's making a lot of mistakes. They're 15th in the league in turnovers. They can't get the ball down the field, 20th in the league in touchdown passes. And what's more striking than ever is they're 21st in yards per attempt. And I think a lot of this, Will, has to do with the offensive scheme. I think they're too generic. I don't think that Bobby Slovic has taken his offense to another level. I think we saw that with Ben Johnson. When Detroit was struggling, then they got hot. And all of a sudden, they started to really, their offense kind of got in gear. And then the next year, their offense became even better. I think what's happened to the Texans is they can't really run the ball effectively, and they can't pass protect, and their scheme doesn't really allow them to do much. And when they get into situations where they have to be in a drop-back pass game, like we saw against Tennessee late in the game, they can't function. Look, I think the other part of this, too, is Fairbairn's made 12 field goals outside of 50 yards. I mean, you're really on a tight line when you're doing that, right? You're walking that tightrope when your field goal kicker's giving you 36 points outside of the 50-yard mark that typically you wouldn't get that many points.
Yeah, and he's actually missed a couple close ones recently. He missed a close one against the Jets, and he missed a close one the other day. So he's a good kicker, but yeah, it's a good point to bring up. Do you give Indy any shot to come back and win that division, or do you think Houston basically going to win that by default?
I think they win it by default. I mean, how do you get on board with Indy? How do you bet Indy? I mean, this week they have New England. They're going into New England. They should be able to run the ball against New England. I mean, New England's lackluster performance last week. Drake May wasn't very good. The offensive line for New England is bad, but I don't know how you get behind the Colts. Their defense never seems to get control of the game. And then offensively, you know, we could sit here and say Shane Steichen's a great play caller, but, you know, they couldn't score any points against the Lions. I mean, with the Lions have gone, what, 8 quarters? They're not giving up a touchdown? I just felt like that their offense is because of the inconsistencies at quarterback. He had 11 completed passes. It's hard to run an offense with 11 completed passes.
Yeah, no doubt. Are you leaning any particular way in this game? It's an ugly game. I'm probably not betting this one.
Houston, you mean Houston or Indy? I don't think, to me, the Houston Jacksonville game to me is going to be a strong consideration for my Hall & Oates. I can't go for either side in this game. I want to bet Houston here because the line's coming down to where it's, if they win by a touchdown, you're going to cover. Right. But I just don't have any faith. Now, look, Jacksonville, I don't know where Trevor Lawrence, and people act like he's coming back. Well, they've scored 13 points the last 2 weeks with Mac Jones. So I think it's either going to be Trevor Lawrence or C.J. Beathard. I'm not sure if Mac Jones is going to be the starter, even if he come back. So, you know, I think I got to wait for the end of the week. If it's Mac Jones or C.J. Beathard, I think you certainly can only take Houston and leave the other side alone because everybody's shocked. I mean, everybody's shocked about two things that I talked to around the league. Everyone's shocked that Joe Shane's going to come back and run the Giants again next year. And everyone's shocked that Doug Peterson still has a job. I mean, I think those are two. I mean, what is going on in Jacksonville if Doug Peterson didn't get fired after the last game?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. And it reminds me of something I wanted to ask you. Look, I know these teams don't tank in the NFL, but that's going to be a point of conversation with DeVito playing over Locke, with, you know, the Jags in the mix for the number one pick. Does that factor into your handicapping? Do you think these teams have a plan of like, hey, let's play the lesser player, try to get a better pick, or that doesn't factor into the thinking at all?
No, because I think the coaches, like, I think Daboll, all the rhetoric out there that he thinks he's on the, you know, that he's coming back, he knows that if this team keeps continuing to tank, and when the locker room comes out and says, we didn't give 100%, and then you got neighbors over there complaining, I just don't see, you know, I don't see them trying to tank. It's not in John Mara's character. I think he wants to see progress. He keeps saying he's seeing progress. I can't find any. Evan Neal, I watched the end zone copy of the tape. That might be one of the worst offensive linemen in football. How they play him, I have no idea. I mean, and Shane drafted him, and everybody goes after Banks, the corner we drafted in the first round. And then added the fact that, if you don't mind those two picks, added the fact that he let Barkley walk down the street because he wanted to sign his buddy Singletary. I mean, don't give me this crap that, you know, they didn't want to sign Barkley. They signed Singletary. They saved $5 million. They gave the $5 million to Drew Locke. You let your best player go. He's going to win. He could win the MVP if we gave MVP to a running back. He should win the MVP. Between him and Henry, they've made big differences to their team. So I'm surprised by that one. I don't think the Giants are trying to tank. I just think the Giants are bad.
If you're advising John Mara, so what do you tell him? You would say get rid of Shane, keep Daboll, or get rid of both of them?
I would tell John Mara, everybody in the organization needs to interview for their job. This is when you're 35% win percentage over the last 12 years. This isn't a coaching problem or a GM problem. It's an institutional problem. To me, they just don't, to me, they've got some real issues. Issues that I think have bothered Pat Shurmur. They bothered Ben McAdoo. They bothered Joe Judge, and they're bothering Daboll. They have people in the organization that have been there a lifetime. They're working on lifetime contracts. There's no motivation to win. They know they're not going to get fired. They just blame everything on the coach. But I think what Dayball's biggest mistake is the fact that he stopped coaching. He stopped being the head coach. If you look at his numbers as the offensive coordinator, they've been a disaster. Like, he was better when he was the head coach in year one than when they were trying to manage the game. I think, to me, that's interesting, and I think he's made a huge mistake. You don't want to be – why do you want to be the play caller? You got the head coaching title. How are you making the offense? You need to make the defense better. That defense – do you realize that defense has one interception all year and they lead the league in sacks?
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think the worst thing for them, and you've talked about this too, when Daboll and Shane took over year one, what was it, 2022, they were supposed to be bad. It was supposed to be like a reset year. And they ended up winning 9 games, fooling themselves into thinking they were good, but they weren't any good. They beat Minnesota in the playoff game, and all right, I guess we have to pay Daniel Jones, and that really set them back, I think.
Yeah, no, and now they're 4-point dogs to Dallas, and I watched Dallas. I mean, I know they hit the over last week, and it was a miracle. Why anybody kicks the ball to Turbin, I have no idea. Dan Quinn knows Turbin, and he kicked the ball to him. But 36 the total in this game. There's some 37.5s out there, but you're a 4-point dog on the road to Dallas, and Dallas isn't any good. I mean, that tells you all you need to know about your team, doesn't it?
It does. What is the Giants team total? Because that's one. If they're playing DeVito, I just don't know how they score. If it's like 14.5, I don't know how they score more than 2 touchdowns. He's just, to me, I remember from college, he's just not an NFL quarterback.
Well, yeah, and plus with DeVito, when you look at him, I mean, he got the crap beat out of him last week. Yeah. So, you know, I don't see how that's going to really, I don't see how he's going to hold up, especially if Parsons coming off the corner in that game. Well, when we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to start talking about college football, because I need to ask Dave Shoemade, our next guest, who in the hell is going to win the Big 12? We'll see you, Ben, when we come back from the break.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Well, we're going to get Dave Shoemade on the line. But one game I wanted to hit you with, Will, before we get going on the college football end of it, is I wanted to talk a little bit about this Jet team, right? I know they're not a story, but the line opened up. The Jets were favored against Seattle, and that line opened at 1.5, and now Seattle is favored by 2.5. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the Jets are favored every week. And every week we sit here and say, how could the Jets be favored? I think people saw Seattle save their season against San Francisco, impressive defensively against Arizona, chance to win the division now. And, I mean, anyone that's bet the Jets has been burned time after time after time. And the market has reacted. So I don't know how you favor the Jets. I don't know any pipe dream of like, hey, win 5 in a row, get back in the mix with playoffs. That's all over. This team is done. Rodgers looks old. You always talk about this with older quarterbacks, their eye level dropping, and you just look at him, he's just checking the ball down. It's all slants. It's all underneath. I don't see much of an appetite to bet the Jets. So Seattle looks reinvigorated. I think that's why the enthusiasm here for the Seahawks.
Yeah. We'll get back to that. Dave Shoemate is going to join the show here. Dave, welcome to the Lombardi Line. It's good to have you. I want to start off asking you one question. Who wins the Big 12? I am so confused. Who's in the lead? Who's not? Actually, today I'm in Ames, Iowa, doing a conference on Gridiron Genius. And, you know, I'm going to go over and see Matt Campbell and see. But I don't know what to ask him because I don't know. Is he going to be in the Big 12 championship or not?
He's tied right now, Mike. Mike, awesome. Appreciate you having me on. But to answer your question, well, we got four teams tied at 6-2, Arizona State, Iowa State, BYU, and Colorado. You got Iowa State, K-State this weekend. That's probably something to bring up to them. That's kind of the matchup everybody thought winner would get into the Big 12 title game. I'm actually pretty sure if Iowa State wins this and Arizona State wins their game against Colorado this week, that's what it would be. It'd be Arizona State, Iowa State, and Arlington next week.
And so does Colorado still have a chance to get in, Dave?
I think they dropped. I think they lose these tiebreakers. I think they lose these tiebreakers here across the board since they lost to Kansas on Saturday.
Yeah.
I was looking into it.
Yeah, I heard Deion talk about it after the game. I wasn't sure if they were out of it because he felt like the team was too much reading the press. Let's shift to the South Carolina, the battle of South Carolina, South Carolina versus Clemson. Is South Carolina one of the most unsung teams in this whole college football season? I mean, if they beat LSU and they got some horrendous calls in that game, they might be in the top 12 teams.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, they're sitting there. They're roughing the passer away after an interception pick six and putting it away, like you said, Mike, from finishing 10-2 if they could finish the deal against Clemson this week. I think they're the most improved team really since that second half of Alabama. I know they didn't look great against Ole Miss. I thought Shane Beamer kind of got them out of that game initially with his fake punt. That's the only game they've kind of just not showed up in. They got it when it got away from them earlier. But really, since then, Lenore Sellers has turned the corner since that second half against Alabama. I think from week one to now week 14, he's the most improved player in the SEC this year. Reminds me of a little bit of Anthony Richardson, a little bit of what we wanted to see it from him when he was in Gainesville at Florida. They kind of have similar traits to me. I don't really think South Carolina's receiving core is that great, but I think Lenore Sellers, with his ability to break tackles in the backfield, extend on the outside, you see a lot of busted coverage because it's putting a lot of their secondary players in conflict. That's where he's at his best. And I think he's the most improved player in the league so far from week one to week 14.
Dave, what is the over under for how many 3-loss teams get into this college football playoff? And who is the team you're most interested to see what the committee does with them here in a couple weeks?
Over under, good over under there. Probably set it at like 1.5, I would say right there. You think it probably 1.5. I mean, you're thinking about those three SEC teams potentially. South Carolina, we just talked about, Ole Miss and Alabama. If you were gonna make me put one of those three in, I mean, that's saying Alabama beats Auburn. It's saying obviously South Carolina beats Clemson, and then Ole Miss should beat Mississippi State. I would probably go Ole Miss. I again, it's weird. I feel like when you're judging the college football playoff, it is South Carolina's probably playing as good as anyone right now. But they did lose the head-to-head to both Ole Miss and Alabama. I know Ole Miss dropped one to Florida this past week. For whatever reason, defensive tackles are getting more carries than running backs on that offense. I don't understand that. I do think, call me crazy, they have 3 losses. I still think Ole Miss is a legit, not really anymore, but if they got into the playoff, could do some damage in the playoffs. I think Ole Miss overall is probably the best out of those three teams. If I was ranking them in teams I didn't want to play, Ole Miss would be the team I would not want to play in that order. So I would probably give them the nod. Again, I like how South Carolina's playing, but I can't get over in a three-team tie. You lost. You're 0-2 against the other teams you're in contention with.
Yeah, I mean, they just play with their food, Dave. Ole Miss, I mean, I agree with you. Giving the ball to the fullback on 4th-and-1, I mean, how many more bad calls on 4th-and-1 is Lane going to have? And then, to me, Florida gave him every opportunity to win that game. They just couldn't take – I mean, the two interceptions at the end of the game by Dart were horrendous. Like, his decision-making were just really bad.
No, you're right. He threw a pick, Mike, and then it looked like the season was over, and then he gets to go have another opportunity, and he – does it again. But no, I mean, I feel like Ole Miss's whole struggles offensively, really just the lack of just committing to a run game. I know hindsight 2020, people want to talk about they should have paid Quinshon Judkins the $800,000 that Ohio State's paying him. He was a conduct detrimental to that team. So that's easy to say now. Yeah, could they use another running back? Sure, but I think a lot of that's what you just said, Mike. Some of it coaching decisions, like, hey, why is Jackson Dart your lead fullback on a stretch play with a 320-pound dude who can't get his foot in the ground and go north and south? They keep him lateral. It's just not setting yourself up, your team up for success.
Georgia now going to be in the SEC title game. And, man, if you gave them truth serum, I don't know if they want to be there because, hey, if they're two losses, they're in. Now this is a chance for a third loss. If they did lose the SEC title game and got a third loss, would they still be in the playoff in your mind?
I think they are. I don't think they're going to, especially now with we have A&M, Alabama, and Ole Miss all losing last week. I think the only team it could – I don't think the runner-up of the SEC championship game is going to get left out unless it's Texas A&M. A fourth loss, I don't know if you can push – I don't think if you can be in the college football playoff. Three losses when you're playing an extra game on everybody's sitting at home. Georgia's the number one strength of schedule. Let's say they're playing Texas again. They lose to Texas. They already beat Texas weeks ago. Are you really going to punish them for playing another top five team across the board? Now, if Texas A&M were to win this week and Georgia were to lose to Texas A&M, you may feel a little different, but I still would have to put Georgia in. I mean, I feel like I've been banging on the table. The runner-up in the SEC, a lot of people were scared to death of that going into last week is where I heard a lot of that. I don't think the runner-up's going to be left out unless it's Texas A&M and they collect that fourth loss.
How about the Oregon Ducks? If all signs point to playing Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, and say they lose to Ohio State on a rematch, do they go from not having a bye to having a play in the first round?
Yeah, Mike, I think it's pretty locked in with the Big Ten right now. I think the loser of that – I mean, I think when you go to Indianapolis and it's going to be Oregon-Ohio State, I think you're playing for the overall number one seed, and the loser is going to get that fifth seed. But, Mike, to be honest, you go look at the bracket. The fifth seed isn't the worst spot to be in, especially if you think maybe those group of five teams, Boise State, rank ahead of the Big 12 champion. Boise State would get that bye, and you'd probably be sitting there playing the Big 12 champ potentially at 12. So that five spot isn't terrible. You play the Big 12 team first at home. You feel pretty good about that if you're sitting there as Ohio State or Oregon. And then your next round matchups at a neutral site against the group of five rep. Again, we play these games for a reason, but if you're Ohio State or Oregon, I mean, you got to probably feel pretty good about getting to the semifinals at that point. So I think the Big Ten, I would be shocked right now if one of those teams were not in the national championship game. I know that's not some crazy comment or anything. Mike, y'all asked me in the season, in the summer, if I had to pick Ohio State and Georgia or the field, who would I take to win the national championship? I took both of those teams. Middle of the season, I didn't feel great about it, but now I actually feel decent about that bet.
Dave, first year of the 12-team playoff. Do you like it? Do you think it's good for the sport? What are your thoughts here on the 12 teams?
Yeah, I do. I actually do like it because I think when we all heard it announced, y'all tell me if I'm wrong, and I'd love to hear y'all's feelings or thoughts on it. I think we all thought, man, how are they going to fill out a 12-team playoff? I mean, God, they're going to essentially letting everybody in. And as we're seeing this year, it's like there's going to probably be some teams in there, especially this year. Because I've been stated, I don't think there's a great elite team in college football this year. That doesn't mean it's not a bad shot. I just think depth has been shot with the transfer portal. You heard Kirby Smart talk about it all the time. I just think overall there's not a great team. I do think overall, though, I feel like Oregon probably is the best team across the board. Again, I will say I would be shocked if Oregon and Ohio State were not sitting there in that national championship game, and probably they'll be on the same side of the bracket. So I feel even better about saying one of them will be in there.
I think we have to change our mindset, Dave, is we have to stop thinking one loss, two loss gets you out. That was the old way of thinking. Now with 12 teams, that's not the old way of thinking. Real quick, I want to hear your take on Texas A&M this week. Does the A&M have any chance to pull an upset?
I actually have A&M winning the game, Mike. I don't have like a ton of confidence in that, but when we did our preview, the SEC Unfiltered channel, I predicted, that's who I took. I just think that environment, I worked there for 2 years. I was there with Jimbo's first game against Clemson in the rain. That was wild. The Joe Burrow, his last college loss, seven overtime, changed the rules. Place gets rocking. I can only imagine what Kyle Field is going to be like this Saturday. First time Texas has put their play since 2011 when Justin Tucker put it through the uprights to end that game. We got playoff implications, SEC championship implications. I think it's going to be a very hard environment offensively. Snap count, cadence, for Texas to hear that. Unless Texas wants to establish a consistent run game, which they haven't been able to, I think they're going to really struggle offensively this week in that environment.
Thank you, Dave. We'll be back. We'll talk playoff pitch.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line, and I want to talk about the VSiN Guide. Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. From expert breakdowns of this week's biggest matchups to deep dives into betting strategy and trends, VSiN delivers the kind of actionable content that gives you the edge. Right now, you can check out articles by Greg Peterson, College Best Bets, Adam Burke's Week 14 College Football Rankings Projections, Toledo versus Akron in back action, which we all love. And later today, you can check out Zach Cohen's NBA Best Bets, Steve Mackinnon's NBA Analyticals Report, and Jonathan Davis' Top NHL Player Prop. You get access to everything we do here at VSiN, including these exclusive articles for only $60 until May 1st, 2025, with our Black Friday special. That's right. Everything we do for $60 until May 1st, 2025, with our Black Friday special. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe today. All right, Will, we just went over the college football breakdown, which I thought Dave Shumate did a great job explaining it all to us about what teams are in and what teams aren't. I know I'm going to go to the Big Ten Championship to watch my son at Oregon play against Ohio State. I'm a little bit worried about that game because I do think when you play in these conference championship games, you get penalized for a great regular season if you lose that game. We saw Georgia happen to them last year, but I want to talk about the NFL playoff rankings and where we're going there, because I think when you look at this, the odds on what we're going to do, and I think there's got to be some sleepers. Arizona now has dropped to the eighth seed at 6-5, which we're not sure. They're not the best team in the West. The 49ers are 5-6. We know they're hurt, and the Rams, for some reason, are the 10th seed at 5-6. But tell me about the West. Let's talk NFC West. Who do you have winning the West, and who would you put your money on right now?
I've been an Arizona guy. I think their schedule is still favorable. Now, it's not just what you bet, it's when you bet it. Now, if you haven't bet anything and you want to bet Arizona, maybe you wait and hope Minnesota beats them this week because they're in Minnesota. They're like a 3.5-point dog, and then you bet them next week at an even bigger number. So that could be a way to play it. San Francisco is interesting. I think they might be done. Now, if you tell me this week they're going to get all their guys back, they're going to get Purdy, they're going to get Bosa, they're going to get Trent Williams, and they can somehow, you know, rally the troops and beat Buffalo. Got a couple winnable games after that. I think it's the Bears, the Rams, and then who knows? Maybe they have a second, third life. I mean, you're close to the situation. Doesn't it just feel like, though, it's one of those years where it's almost like whack-a-mole, where one problem pops up, you take care of that, something else pops up, the kicker misses kicks, the defense blows the game. Now Purdy's hurt. If it's not one thing, it's another. I don't know if it's Super Bowl hangover. You know, they had the Ayuk contract issues. They've had injuries. If it's just always something with them. So I'm tempted, like, when you look at these numbers, I only bring them up. Like I personally think they're dead. I think they're probably not going to win against Buffalo this week, and that'll be it. I only bring them up because if you look at the AFC, I think we've known six of the seven playoff teams for a while, and with Denver playing well, we might know all seven playoff teams if Denver can take care of business. The NFC, it's not as clear cut, but you got Minnesota, Green Bay, and Detroit, all three teams from one division. You've got the division winners. So unless you think Tampa can unseat Atlanta, which I do, Atlanta's plus 220 to miss the playoffs, maybe that's a way to go. The West and like the final wild card are the only spots, unless you think Washington, who does have a pretty easy schedule, unless you think, hey, this, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, they haven't played well. Daniels, maybe still the rib injury. I'm not sure if that's a factor. Unless you think Washington can gack up a spot. Do you have anything right now in terms of like outside looking in, this team could get in and is worth a bet for the playoffs?
I think you handicapped it well. I think Washington, now look, they lose the tiebreaker to Tampa because they lost the opening game to them. But, you know, there's still two games ahead of Tampa in that wild card seventh seed. And, you know, look, Arizona, they're only one game behind them in the, because they've, Washington, Arizona's had to buy Washington as them. But on the West, to me, I agree with you on San Francisco. I think they're really struggling, you know, whether, you know, they think Brock Purdy may have a chance to play, but that line opened at 4. It's at 7 now. That was a look ahead line at 4. That line's all the way up. San Francisco's a 7-point dog on the road. They're just not good enough on defense. They can't control the pace of the game. Now, sometimes Buffalo plays with their food, but coming off a bye week, I don't know about that. I'm with you. I like the Arizona team. I thought to hold Seattle to 13 points was really good for a defense that I don't really trust. This week is going to be an interesting game because I've often felt this in my time in the league. Whenever you play a bunch of two road games in a row and you come home, there's always a sense, okay, now we're home. And there's a slight letdown that you think home field's going to take advantage of the game for you. There's always a sense that, oh, we're playing home, so that means we're going to win. No, you still have to play well. And I think to me, if we saw what Chicago was able to move the ball a little bit on Minnesota, I think that Arizona can move the ball on Minnesota. I think that's why the line isn't more than 3.5. I think to me that's going to be an interesting game. It would not surprise me if Arizona pulled an upset this week. It really wouldn't. I still think they're the best team in the West. I know Seattle won that game, but Arizona's, when they can get James Conner going, which they couldn't last week, I think they're a completely different team.
How about Atlanta plus 220 to miss the playoffs? They play the Chargers, and that line, they're now 1.5-point dogs against the Chargers. Then they go at Minnesota, like we talked about with Tampa. They play Carolina twice. They get the Saints at home. They get the Raiders at home. They get the Cowboys. They do have one game against the Chargers, but I don't know. Is Tampa going to win the division? Do you think that plus 220 is enough to bet Atlanta to miss the playoffs?
Yeah, I do. I thought Tampa really came out. I know it was the Giants, and I know the Giants, but with Vita Vea healthy and Chauncey healthy inside, I mean, they're really good. They're a good front. I mean, they can rush and they can power you back, the guards. They can cause problems to the quarterback. Now, I know they were playing Tommy DeVito, so I get that. But I thought Baker was really good. Look, Baker's kind of a fascinating guy. He gets cut in Cleveland. He goes to Carolina. He can't even complete an out pass in Carolina. Wow. He gets cut by Carolina. He goes to the Rams, has one half of football for the Rams. The Rams had no interest in really even signing him back. I thought they would. He had one good half against the Raiders on that 2-minute drive, and now he's come back. And now he comes back, and he really looks like a polished, good player. Yeah. It's remarkable to me. And, you know, I had written him off. He doesn't get, you know, he used to get 6 to 7 balls batted out at the line of scrimmage all the time in every game. And now he's kind of done a better job of moving in the pocket. His leadership's been outstanding. Look, I think Atlanta, and I've been talking about this all spring and summer, that you can't win with no defense. You can't stay in the game. I mean, how are they going to stop Justin Herbert this week? How are they going to stop the Chargers from running the ball this week? How are they going to stop Herbert from completing that unless Quentin Johnson drops it? But how are they going to do that, Will?
Yeah, and it feels like it's the same Falcon team for like a dozen years. Even the Matt Ryan team, some of those teams, they're soft. They can't get pressure. They're just kind of a soft dome team without a good defense. It feels like even though the players change, it's been the same team for a while now. It's really interesting. Let me ask you, from your time in the league, is it different trying to get your team to focus the week of Thanksgiving, especially like if you're a bad team? Because I was just thinking, like, man, if I was a player on like a 3-9 team, I don't know if my level of focus would be there. You've got the holiday. Does that factor in at all to your handicapping? Is Thanksgiving week, the holiday weeks, are they different?
Yeah, they are, because I think if you have no accountability within the building, the players run amok. So, like, let's take Jacksonville, right? There's no – Doug has had no accountability for 3 years down there. So the players do whatever they want. And so here's what happens. You got guys gain 20 pounds during Thanksgiving week. Nobody's weighing in on Thursday. Nobody's weighing in Friday morning after Thanksgiving. You know, coaches wouldn't – you can't do that. That's not fair to the players. It's not fair to us. I'm not weighing in after Thanksgiving week either. But to me, it affects your play, right? And I think all those little things start to add up, whereas I think Pittsburgh will be locked in. I think Buffalo coming off a bye will be locked in because that's their program. I think this is a week in betting where you really have to take the coaches that have really good control of their program. You know, Miami – they're playing Thursday night. Now, look, we think it's going to be 26 degrees in Green Bay. It might snow. It's going to have wind 15 mile an hour. I mean, are you going to bet two in that game?
We've seen that enough. Look, the Dolphins, they're the best thing as a bettor. They're predictable. When they play the Patriots and the Raiders of the world, they're home. It's 80 degrees. They're a machine. They score their 30 points. They win. They cover. And when it's not, they don't. So I'm not going to complain about them because they are very predictable. So to answer your question, no, I will not be playing Tua in the cold weather. To me, that is a Green Bay bet.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think to me that leads us into the AFC conversation here, in the sense that who do you trust in the AFC? I mean, do you think Miami can get in? I mean, I think Miami, since he at 4-7, still has a chance. Now they got to play some tough games. I mean, how about this, Will? But since he's favored against Pittsburgh this week at home, it opened to 3 and now it's 2.5 because Pittsburgh money came in, but it had to come in, right? But how are they favored against anybody? With that defense?
People like offense. I don't know. The public likes offense. You can make the case, hey, a play here, a play there against Baltimore. They're going to look back and say, how the hell did we give away the Baltimore games? How the hell did we give away a game against New England? If they miss the playoffs by a game or so, which look, they're probably going to miss the playoffs, they're going to have plenty of games to point the finger at themselves and say, man, we really let this get away. I think the playoffs would be more fun if they were in it, if we had Burrow, if we had that offense. But I just don't know. Like, they could beat anybody, but they could lose to anybody too. And we're talking about a situation here where they don't have to run the table, but they can maybe afford one loss. They're going to have to beat Denver when they play later in the season. I just don't know if they're consistent enough to do it. I understand taking a shot at them at plus 350, but Denver's playing so well, it just feels like that might be dead money too. Similar to San Francisco, where on paper, they're good enough to be playoff teams, but we don't play these games on paper, obviously.
Yeah, I just, to me, if you can't play good defense, it's really hard to get control of the game. It's really hard to feel like you're going to stay in the game. The game can slip away from you, like we saw the, and of course, Joe Mixon hit the nail on the head when he blamed Zach Taylor for all of it. When we come back in the next hour on the Lombardi Line, we're going to talk more about NFL playoffs and we're going to handicap Thanksgiving Day games. We'll